Hi, I'm Circe Olson Wessner. I'm the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tijeras, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, At Ease. Our guest today is children's book author Sarah Doran, who wrote The Peppered Sky. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you too. I was so excited. I couldn't even remember the name of our museum. That's something, isn't it?
That's not a bad problem to have.
I guess not. Hey, so Sarah, let's just jump right into it. Let's start with your background first. You're a military brat, you're a veteran, your spouse. Yeah.
Well, I am all of those things, have been all of those things. Yes, I grew up the daughter of an army chaplain. My dad was a chaplain in the army from the time I was in first grade through my young adulthood. And he actually, before he was even an army chaplain, he was in the Air Force for 7 years as an officer. And then there was a short time in the middle there where he was going to seminary to become a chaplain. So yes, I grew up my entire life as a military child, and then I joined the military myself when I was 21 years old. I married a service member, so we were dual military for most of our enlistment, and we both honorably discharged in 2013. So now we are both veterans.
So what prompted you to join the military? I mean, some people just, I've had it. I'm done with the military life.
Right. For me, I loved being a military kid. I embraced the adventure. I loved meeting new people and going new places and trying new cuisine. And I mean, everything that you could possibly want in a military child, that was kind of who I was, and I just embraced it fully. And so some people know this, some people don't, but when you are a dependent, you can maintain your dependent status as long as you're in college. But once you reach a certain point in your life, the military says, okay, you're no longer a dependent. We're taking your ID card. And that day had arrived for me, or it was getting ready to arrive for me. And I suddenly felt very stripped of my identity and who I had always been, and this access to my home, which was on post, regardless of which post that was. That was my home and where I felt comfortable, and I kind of went into panic mode, like, oh no, how do I fix this? I don't want to lose this part of who I am. And one solution to that was joining the military. I didn't necessarily ever have the ambition originally to be in the military, but I was working in a job as a young adult. It was very paycheck to paycheck, and I wanted to do something more with my life. And I said, I could probably do this. And so I did. I decided I'm going to do this. And then I had to, figure out what job I was going to do. And my dad actually tried to get me to join the Air Force, as a good army dad should. But I was determined they were going to make me wait, I don't know, 9 months or something to be able to enlist with the Air Force. And the Army said, oh, we'll take you tomorrow if you want to go tomorrow. And so, being the impatient person that I was, I said, okay, sign me up. And so, the rest is really history, but that's really what prompted me to join the military.
Well, I have a question that I want to follow up on that, but getting back to how you felt panic when you were going to have your ID card taken away. I don't know if you know, but April is the month of the military child, and the National Military Brats Day is April 30th. And it is the last day of the month of Military Child Month, and the group of people that chose that day, chose it specifically because it symbolizes the last time a brat, a military kid, will have an ID card. And so by putting it on the 30th of April, the last day of April, it kind of showed how symbolic to lose your ID card it really is. And so that's kind of a thing that when you that popped into your, when you were talking, that popped into my head. So the April 30th is the day because a lot of brats felt like what you did. Oh my gosh, I can't go home. I can't go see space, you know? There is a whole like trauma around this.
There truly is. You know, I had no idea, honestly, until I started doing some of these other podcasts. Mm-mm-mm. And I was on a podcast with Grace of a Military Child Life. Mm-hmm. And she really resonated when I started bringing this up. She's like, yes, it truly does feel like an identity crisis. Mm-hmm. When you kind of reach that point, or in her case, you know, her dad had an accident. And so they got out rather quickly and unexpectedly. And so anyway, it truly is kind of traumatic, I think, for somebody who's been raised in that culture and that community for most of their life.
Yeah. So speaking of being raised, you were raised a military child. Did that make your transition to soldier easier or harder? What do you think?
You know, I do think I had kind of a unique perspective when it came to becoming a soldier. I knew what it was like to be around uniforms. Mm-hmm. Versus like my husband, who grew up a civilian and mostly around civilians his whole childhood. Yeah. And so there was a familiarity with being on post already and understanding that cultural and that environment that I do think set me up for success. You would think I would know more about, you know, the rank structures. I knew there were officers and enlisted, and there were warrant officers. Did I know the rank structure beyond that? No, that would have been helpful. Mm-hmm. I still remember being at the end of basic training, and my dad was there, and I guess he was friends with the general who was at basic training. And so after my graduation that day, he's like, "We're going to go meet the general." And I'm like freaking out because this is a big deal. I'm a brand new private. And I'm trying to remember all these things that I just learned in training about, you know, what's the proper etiquette and how do I stand and what's that guy's rank and all of this stuff. And it was just so like stressful. But overall, yes, I do think that being a military kid really did kind of help set me up for success. and then marrying a soldier as well. I kind of had seen, you know, my mom and dad's marriage through those transitions, the moving, the deployments, and the back and the forth, and, you know, just the on call and all of that. So I do think that it kind of helped me understand my role as a spouse in all of that as well. So to answer your question, I think it did.
So what surprised you most when you became a spouse? What surprised you in your journey then? Because that would have been a different experience as well.
Yeah. You know, being dual military is definitely not for the faint of heart, especially if you're enlisted. Mm-hmm. We were specialists, and our unit was interesting. When we were deployed the first time to Iraq is when we were engaged. And in Iraq, we were often on different, you know, shifts and things. And so we would have some time together to sit mm-hmm. and talk. Mm-hmm. And I remember multiple times people, you know, passing by, and these upper enlisted NCOs would come over and put their hand between us and like push us apart. You know, you guys need to sit further apart.
Wow.
And it didn't matter that we were engaged, you know, but they you're too close. So
it is, I would never have imagined that. Wow.
My goodness. Yes. So then the second we got home from Iraq and were married fairly quickly. And then our second deployment, I thought, oh, this is going to be so much easier because we'll be married. Mm-hmm. It was not. We were newly married still. I mean, it had only been a year by the time we deployed the second time. And I thought, oh, they'll let us live together and all of this. No. The women and the men were separated by, you know, I think they were 12-man tents. And so I was also working night shift. He was on days and he was on flight status. I was not. And so there was a lot of not seeing each other, not interacting a whole lot at all. And so I think that was probably the most challenging was, not being treated like a married couple when we were deployed. Mm-hmm. And then just the legalities of things. We got married 4 hours after we landed at the courthouse from Iraq, because soldiers come down on orders typically when they first get home. And if you are coming down on orders before you've married somebody, the Army is not obligated to keep you together. So in order to combat being separated, we said we need to go ahead and get this done legally immediately so that they can't just separate us right away. And so there's just all these little considerations and things, but I also think that it just really set us up for success as a couple, mm-hmm. and the fact that we came from the same unit, we were the same rank, we worked the same job. And so, you know, when we got home at night, it couldn't be, you know, oh, I'm too tired to, you know, make dinner, or I'm too tired to vacuum or whatever. It was, we both did the same job today. We both did the same PT. We both did the same, you know, hours or whatever. We're going to work together as a team. And so we've, you know, from the get-go, we've just learned how to work together as a good team. And so for that, I'm very thankful.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I'm just still imagining, you know, most people, their wedding day is like this huge, big, dramatic, wonderful thing. And you literally, you were still in your ACUs, or did you go home and shower
first? We did go home and shower first. So it was about 4 hours after we landed. And it was so funny because actually the story, I had to back up slightly before we came home from Iraq. About a week before we actually landed back in the States, we were supposed to leave. We were waiting on our flight, and somebody came in and said, well, your flight's been canceled because of a volcano eruption in Iceland. And we all just thought they were joking. But this is what happened in 2010. There was a giant eruption in Iceland that shut down flights for about a week. And so we were stranded in Iraq for about a week. Mm-hmm. And back home, our parents were waiting for us, but his parents had to go back to Oregon. So they had about 2 days left when we finally made it home. And we knew we needed to get married, and we wanted them to be present for it. Mm-hmm. And my dad, being a chaplain, was going to officiate. Mm-hmm. So once we landed, we immediately went to the courthouse and did the paperwork. And we had the wedding planned for a couple months later. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be out in Oregon, the big celebration and all of this. And so really, we were doing this for the paperwork purposes. And so I remember going into the courthouse and telling them, you know, we're here to get married. We have our officiator here with us and witnesses. And they said, okay, well, here's your paperwork, and you're going to go do what you do, you know, say your words or whatever, and then you'll sign here, and then you'll bring it back and we'll file it. And so then we turned around, my dad signed and we signed, and we handed it right back to them. And they were like, don't you want to say anything? And we're like, no, we're good. And they're like, this is probably the fastest wedding in Bell County that we've ever seen. And I'm sure they thought we were just nuts, but anyway, it was a weird, chaotic, crazy, funny story. And then after that, we went and my husband picked out a ring, and then a couple weeks later, he got down on a knee and said, would you marry me again? And so it was very unconventional. And
but, that's really, really cool. Really romantic.
Thank you.
So how long have you guys been married now?
So we just celebrated our 13th wedding anniversary in July. So it's been a wild ride. Thank you.
So when my husband and I, well, when my husband was in, we moved 18 times in 20 years, and thought we'd settled in New Mexico. And then suddenly, you know, after like being there a decade or something, in a space of 2 years, because of my husband's job, we moved to Hawaii, and now we're in Germany. And so even 10 years after, I don't know how long he's been out of the military, it's even been longer, you know, I'm now doing the military spouse thing again, you know, just packing up and moving. And I was wondering where all you've lived, and which postings have been the most enjoyable. Because, I mean, you've got your active duty time, you've got your brat time, you've got, you know, mm-hmm. you know, all this other stuff. Where was your favorite post? I mean, how many times did you guys move and all that?
Oh, okay. I mean, I've done this calculation a few times, but do I remember? No. My active duty service time, we were at Fort Hood the entire time. So we had our training at, you know, Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And then we had our AIT training at Fort Eustis. Those were both fairly short. And then we were stationed at Fort Hood the entire time, deploying twice. So that really wasn't super exciting. I mean, going to the Middle East was a new experience for sure. Not necessarily my favorite experience. But as a military kid, we definitely moved around a lot. We were at Fort Bragg, Fort Liberty, I think now. We were at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, for a brief period of time. We were at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. And then my absolute favorite location, I actually graduated high school out of Fort Leavenworth area, but was able to follow mom and dad for the summer. They went to Vicenza, Italy. And that was definitely my favorite duty station, even though it was a pretty small base. Being in the economy and I guess the age that I was as a brand new, you know, high school graduate, I was just at a point in my life where I was being able to truly enjoy the culture and the history. And I learned how to drive over there, which was a very interesting experience as well. And it opened my eyes up to the world in a totally new and beautiful way. And I've been wanting to go back ever since.
There, that's cool. Shifting gears and having just ended the conversation on your graduating from high school. So school has started in many of our listeners' areas. And so I wanted to ask, and you know, you mentioned a whole bunch of places you'd lived. All of that moving that you did in your life must have been hard on you, you know, starting a new school, being the new kid, making new friends. Were you a gregarious little kid or were you introspective and shy? What kind of kid were you?
You know, I think overall, I'm a pretty introverted person. Being an author has stretched me in some ways, because I've had to be more open to talking with people that I don't know. And obviously being a military child, you're in a situation where you are kind of forced into new environments where you're needing to make new friends. I think the majority of my growing up years, I was in schools that were military on military bases. There were a couple schools that were not. I think those schools were harder for the transition, the ones that were not on post, because some of the kids, you know, kind of grew up together and were less open to new friendships. The on-base schools, though, all of the kids, we were all in the same boat. And so feel like military kids kind of learn how to be very accepting and adaptive, even though they may be shy or outgoing or whatever. There's just more of an acceptance and a welcoming environment in those schools, at least from what I experienced. And so, you know, it was definitely nerve-wracking to start at a new school. But the transitions were always easier, I think, at these schools that were on post.
Yeah. So how did your parents help you overcome the first day jitters or prepare you for moving? I mean, did they do anything special to help you through that? And like, and do you do that now with your own kids or did you when?
You know, my parents always wanted to set us up for success. And they always wanted to encourage us to be independent and to think things through. And so they were very good about communicating the reality of a situation and trying to help us wrap our brain around what to expect. And I definitely do that with my own children as well. As far as, you know, we've moved a few times since my own children, not military related, but just for work and things. And I know that I've always been a why person. If I understand why, then I'm much more willing to do whatever it is I need to do.
Right.
And so I think in my own parenting I typically give them the why, whether they want it or not. This is why we're doing this, so that you understand, you know, what's at stake. And it, I think that kids are so much stronger and smarter than we tend to give them credit for. And they're capable of adapting oftentimes better than we are.
Well, you know, there also seem to be a lot more resources now available to military kids and their parents. And when I was, you know, a parent, you know, raising my own kids in the military, but or maybe I just didn't know what was out there back then. I mean,
No, I would agree with you. I don't think that there were near the number of resources that we have available now. I mean, even looking at children's books, I mean, I did a lot of research into military children's books, and there were none when growing up. I don't remember ever seeing myself in literature as a military child or family. And so even like books have come a long way. But I mean, I'm blown away by the programs and the, you know, options that military families have access to now.
But I still am hearing other military children's book authors, writers, saying there isn't a whole lot of literature, especially picture books for military kids. There are some. I mean, I have interviewed a goodly amount of people, but, you know, when you compare it to everything else that's out there, there's much. So is that what inspired you to create this book, was to reach out to that population, or what inspired you?
Well, military families have been on my heart for a long time. I didn't necessarily know what that meant or how that was going to kind of come to fruition in my life. A little backstory, I went to school to be an elementary teacher. And in the middle of my teaching studies, I did a project. It was a children's literature class. And they said, you know, pick a theme, and then you're going to, you know, dive into, you know, authenticity of the author, and, you know, how you present this as a, you know, learning resource. Anyways, I chose military kids books randomly because I thought, oh, that sounds interesting, and I'm sure that will, you know, be a fun one to do. And I realized very quickly that they're just either, first of all, there weren't very many of them. I mean, that was clear. I think I found maybe five when I was doing this project, and that was 10 years ago. The ones that I did find were either outdated, you know, from like Vietnam era, or the quality was poor. And so that kind of sparked something. But at the time, I was just thinking, well, maybe I'll teach, you know, at on-post schools or something. Well, fast forward, I switched my degree from elementary education a year before graduation to business management. Lots of different reasons why, but I did. And I walked away from all of this training and thought, oh, I've wasted my time. I can't believe I've walked away from this. But really, that class and that project stuck with me. Fast forward further, I graduated with my business degree. Now it's 2020. I've got a lot of extra time on my hands, and I started dabbling in children's books writing. And the first one I wrote was not great. It was very fable-y with, you know, animal characters and a lesson at the end, and it just was meh. And my friend who was working with me on it, she's like, you know, you really need to write what you know, and then you're going to find your passion and your drive. Because I was feeling very discouraged after writing this first book. And that's really what clicked for me. I said, you know, I know the military lifestyle. I know what it's like to be a military kid. I know what it's like to be a service member and a spouse. And now I'm a veteran. And I know that there's also not books, you know, for these, this population, and what is out there. I want to, you know, hold a higher standard of literary quality for that market. And so once I figured all of that out and I started writing down my stories, they just started flowing, and it was truly incredible. Writers talk about this like magic place that they get into, and And the stories just kind of start flowing and everything clicks. And I found that place. Once she said, you know, write what you know, it just all fell into place for me. So.
Well, and I have to say that, you know, the topic in your book, Peppered Sky, is not one I've seen in other children's books. Not that I've seen every kid's book out there now, but it's about a military family watching paratroopers jump out of airplanes during training. I mean, basically that's it.
Yes.
And so I thought that was unique and great. And then you wrote it all in rhyme. So it was really cool. Have you always liked poetry, or what made you want to write the book in verse?
So as a mom, I am drawn to the children's books that are written with some rhyme and rhythm. Uh-huh. I think that's the musician side of me that is drawn to that. Mm-hmm. And so it felt very sing-songy. It was just always more fun for me as a parent. And I thought, you know, the parents are the ones who are buying these books. Yeah. I'm going to write the way that I like to read, but also try. And I have so many ideas in my head that I tried to cram into this story. So I knew that was one of them. I knew I wanted it to be educational. So not just for military kids to see themselves in literature, but also something that could appeal to a wider audience who might be curious about the military family.
And then
just not just having it rhyme, but having it mean something. I wanted to leave my readers with a feeling and a thought. And I felt like I was truly able to do that with this story.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really pretty. It was nice. It was educational. Like, I don't know anything about the details, you know, just were, you know, really good. So, okay. Did you have a lot of support when you first announced to the universe that you were going to write a book, or did you get like your friends rolling their eyes and say, okay, good luck with that, or, you know, that's a lot of work, or that's dumb? Did you get that?
I did. Honestly, I had a lot of people that I love who were like, you know, this is just something that'll fizzle out. She'll get it, you know, she'll work on it for a little while and then it'll fizzle out and she'll move on to something else. Cause I've always had kind of that busy personality and, you know, what's next and what am I going to work on next? And, but once I kind of got into that place, I was like, oh, this is good. Like I'm going to do this. And so I started sharing it with, you know, some close friends and family, and even my friends and family, they were like, oh, this is nice. But I wasn't entirely sure, like, okay, is this nice or is this awesome? You know?
Yeah. See, nice is one of those words that people say when they're not really sure what to say.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Then I started branching out and I'm like, you know, I'm going to reach out to like people who don't know me and just like see what they think. And then I was really starting to get some, what I felt like was truly, you know, transparent feedback. And it was aligned with what my friends and family had said, that I felt like I could truly trust it because, you know, there was no bias.
Yeah. Yeah. So really quickly, give us like a quick overview of how your process of creating the book. You've already, you know, talked a little bit about your feedback loop, but from concept to publication to marketing, did you just figure it out as you went along, or was there a class that you took to help you or a mentor, and sort of what was the process?
Sure. I started off thinking I wanted to go traditional publishing because that's what my friend who I had been working with my first story, she was saying, oh, I'm going to go the traditional route with her own stories because of the X, Y, and Z. And I said, oh, well, that makes sense. And so that's what I'll do. So I bought a book about literary agents and how to write query letters and all of these things. And so I did all of this research, and then I started just making a checklist and going through the process of writing these letters, submitting my stories. I went through about a year of that. That was 2021. And the overarching theme from those query letters was basically the publishers didn't find enough value in a military themed book. I don't know that it just would have made enough money for them to think that it was worth it, which is unfortunate because I really do think that there's a lot of value in this kind of story. But that led me to my conclusion that if I wanted to do this, and I had already put in so much work to this point, that I could consider self-publishing, and I could probably do it better than another publisher could, because I have the drive and the business background at this point. And so I felt like, you know what, okay, I'm just going to try. And if this is a giant fail, then I'll learn from it and we'll move on. So I did have a few people who were instrumental in kind of helping me along in my journey. In my research, I realized very quickly that if I wanted a quality illustrator, which is a very important part of a picture book, that I was going to need funding. Not free. So once I found an illustrator that I loved, I realized very quickly, well, we can't personally fund this project. There's just no way I can do this. And so I started brainstorming, okay, what do I do? And my illustrator actually said, you know, I've got this other client that I illustrated her book for, and she just ran a Kickstarter to fund her book. And, you know, it's something you could consider. Let me connect you to her. So I met with Katie, was her name, another author. And she kind of ran me through. I mean, I picked her brain for a couple hours that day, asking her all of the questions. And I said, you know what, this is a, you know, a very valid option for being able to run, raise this kind of funding to do this project. And if I'm going to do this project, I'm going to need the funding. So long story short, I ran a Kickstarter about a year ago. It was last July in 2022, raised over $20,000, which was my funding goal. And we began the illustration process in August of last year. And so I had the funding at this point. I had the illustrator, I had a designer, and I knew which printer I wanted to use. And so once all of those pieces kind of fell into place, I did a lot of my research online with just, you know, what can I Google, and joining Facebook groups for, you know, young authors and aspiring authors, and was able to ask questions on there. Something that I learned in the military, I worked at ACS briefly. And the biggest takeaway I took from that working that job was, if I don't have an answer, somebody out there does.
Oh, yeah.
And I just have to find that person. And so that has really driven the way that I research things. And I know somebody out there has this answer. So I've just got to keep looking until I find that person. And so that's really what I did with my publishing process. I just did the research. I found the people who knew the answers to my questions. And then I made my list, my checklist, and just went one thing at a time. And did it, was it perfect? No. Did I learn a lot? Yes. And did I do everything in order? No. But I learned from everything. And I feel like I'm at a place now where book number two is going to be a lot more efficient.
Yeah, no, that's pretty impressive. And let's talk about your illustrator. It's Beth Snyder.
Yes.
How did you find her? And then here's the other thing. I've illustrated some books for people. And there's a, you know, there's different ways people approach these things. How did you do this? Did you say, hey, I want six paratroopers and I want them here? Or did you give her like just free reign to do what she wanted, or what? How did
The illustrative process was interesting. I guess, you know, for me, I had never obviously done this before. She actually was a previously published illustrator. I was connected to her via my folks. My folks were leading a small Bible study in their house, and her aunt and uncle were attending that Bible study. And my mom was sharing at Bible study, I guess as a prayer request, I don't know, saying, hey, my daughter is trying to write, she's written these awesome stories and she's looking for an illustrator. And her aunt popped up and said, oh, my niece does this professionally. And so they connected us. And I fell in love with Beth's work. Beth, I think at that point she had been published at least 8 to 10 times, if not more. And she had done a lot of work for charities and nonprofits and things. And so Beth's kind of niche is working with self-published authors. And so she has a lot of experience working with people in my situation, first-time authors and all of that. And so she was able to kind of guide me through a lot of that process. As far as the illustrations go, I feel like I gave her a lot of, you know, creative license to kind of do what she was going to do. But there were some things that, you know, I was able to help provide insight for. For example, when she first did the sample illustration, it's the page in there where the kids are watching and there's paratroopers filling the sky. Mm-hmm. And when she first did it, all of the paratrooper parachutes were gold and they were very pretty. Mm-hmm. That I was like, no, they're green. And so that was, you know, one of those things that she didn't grow up in a military family. Oh. Her dad and grandfather had served, but it was after, you know, she was young, or, you know, too young to remember. There we go. You know, little things like that, or trying to describe a drop zone to somebody who's never experienced a drop zone, specifically there in the Fort Bragg, Fort Liberty area. It's a very unique kind of environment. You've got like the coastal vegetation and like the sand duney area where they actually drop. And then you've got the forests along the outside. Mm-mm. And she's like, well, I've just never seen anything like this before. And I'm like, no, it's really kind of unique in how it is, how it looks. And so there were things like that that we were able to kind of work through. But she, I mean, she did a lot of the creative, you know, because I'm just not, I don't draw. my writing is my creativity. And so I was really thankful that she had the vision and the experience to be able to kind of lead me through that process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was very successful. And, you know, as you were speaking, I was thinking, you know, I wouldn't know about, you know, like formation. I mean, they can't just like all jump out at the same time. You know, there's got to be planning. So they've got to land in different parts of the sky at different places. Mm-hmm. It had to be pretty detailed there. Yes. I would have had, you know, them all over the place. And somebody, an expert would have said, oh yeah, no.
You know, I think that there's some creative liberties there with it being a children's story. It doesn't have to be completely technically accurate. And so for that, I'm thankful, because I'm sure there are things that paratroopers are looking back. And, you know, I used my dad for some of the research, saying, okay, Dad, how did you do this? And what did this look like? Or how did this feel? And then he'd kind of look at the illustrations as we're going through to kind of figure out, you know, oh, this is wrong. Or, you know, his uniform needs to be a little tweaked, or, you know, whatever.
Cool. I know we talked about this a little bit. You didn't want to do the print on demand and you wanted to, you know, pay for and publish up front. And you raised all this money. I'm so impressed that you raised all this money. But what was it about not doing print on demand? You wanted to have go to a real publisher and have like a stack of books, right? That's what you ended up doing, right?
So I used what's called an offset printer. Mm-hmm. So being a self-published author, I am the publisher. Mm-hmm. And so as far as deciding between print on demand and an offset printer, there are definitely pros and cons. I knew from the get-go that one of the most important things to me in creating this book was authenticity and quality. Mm-hmm. Not only in the writing, but the illustrations, as well as the pages and the book materials itself. I started researching the qualities that the different printers could do, whether that was, you know, KDP, which is the Kindle Direct Publishing, which is through Amazon, or Ingram Spark is the other big print-on-demand printer. And I would find things like these little white lines that would go through some of the pages, and they didn't feel as nice to me. And they all had this, you know, white page at the end of the book that had a barcode. And those were things that bothered me as an author. I said, you know, this isn't what I envision for this book. And so then I found my printer, which is it's Formax, And I knew that I wanted to print. If I was going to print, I wanted to print in the US because I felt like that would resonate with my military readers. And so I found Formax. They had excellent reviews and they sent me some samples, and I just fell in love with the feel of their product and the quality of the pictures and even the glossiness of the pages. And I just said, you know, this is probably what I need to do. And like I said, there's pros and cons to both. One of the cons that I'm running into with having used an offset printer is I'm very limited on my distribution options. For example, getting into Barnes and Noble, I have to use a print on demand for Barnes and Noble to buy my book to have on their shelves. And that's very frustrating as an author who feels like she's created something of quality, because it's not in their system. Whereas the Ingram Spark books are.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, you don't think about that when you're starting. So knowing now what you didn't know then, would you have still done this book? I think you would have. You sound like you are still happy about it. But if you had known all this research and all this stuff, would you have gone forward if you had known ahead of time what a long slog it was going to be?
Yes, I absolutely would have. I am so, so thrilled with the product that I have been able to create with my team. And as the story, you know, it's been on the market for right at 6 months now, so it's still pretty new. Mm-hmm. But the feedback that I've been getting from people is just so humbling and so honoring. And military families are loving seeing their families represented in a quality book. That their children are begging to read at bedtime, and civilian families are loving the educational aspect that helps their, you know, a lot of teachers and librarians are coming to me saying, I love your lesson plan at the back of the book because it just really opens up the story to, you know, extend beyond the story. Right. That was my goal. I mean, that's what I worked so hard to create. And so it's so rewarding to hear the impact that it's having on families and schools and the community at large.
Well, that's good. And, you know, that also is helpful because so many teachers now are just, you know, forced to justify everything they do. It has to fit into some sort of standard and some sort of, you just can't have a teacher read a book for fun anymore. Now it's got to have a purpose to be read, you know? So it's nice to have the lesson plans because then you don't have to, you know, it's not
right.
A piece of work.
Exactly.
So where can people buy your book?
My book is available on a variety of platforms. I obviously sell face to face, and it's in some local stores here in the Central Texas area. However, it is also on Amazon. It's on Etsy. On Etsy, you can actually get a personalized author signed copy, which is really special. And then it's also on a platform called Spousely, which is a fairly new platform. And it is imagine Etsy, but all of the vendors are either military or first responder connected.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a fairly new platform. It's beautiful. Monica is the startup for that platform, and she's done such beautiful work, and it's really, really cool. So if you want to support your local military spouses primarily, but veterans, first responder families, you can go on there and do all your Christmas shopping and know that you're supporting the military and first responder communities.
Well, what I'll do is I will put the links to these different platforms in the bottom of the podcast so that people can, you know, do that and check it out. And we have a lot of writers that listen to our podcast and some artists. They may find that this Spousely is a place for them to sell their stuff as well.
Yes, we're all, we're looking to grow. So if you are a veteran or military or first responder connected, it's a beautiful place to find community. Monica's always got community events and things to help each other grow. We're really here to support each other.
Okay. Well, very cool. Well, we'll definitely put those on the bottom. So in the few minutes we have left, what else would you like our listeners to know You're working on another book, right? You
did. I am working on another book. I actually just started the process officially at the end of August. My second book is called Sleeping Giants, and it is inspired by my service in the military as a helicopter mechanic. And so the story itself is about a little boy named Finn, whose mom is an aircraft mechanic. And they go to the hangar to do something, but you don't know what it is yet. And while they're waiting for that, he gets to explore the helicopters that are there in the hangar. And those are the sleeping giants. And so it's very imaginative. It's still written in the same rhyme and meter that my first story is. It will still have educational resources and an activity in the back. But it's definitely more imaginative. Definitely gets into the three Army helicopters, the Chinook, the Apache, and the Black Hawk. I was a Black Hawk mechanic, so it was a lot of fun to write. It's actually my husband's favorite story.
Well, there. That sounds good. I look forward to seeing that. And when is that going to be out? Do you have an idea?
So we are expecting it to be released next year. I'm hoping for summer of 24.
Okay. Well, keep me posted. We'll do another podcast.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love that.
Yeah. Well, so I wanted to thank our listeners for tuning in today, and also to let them know again that this podcast has been brought to you by the Museum of the American Military Family and Learning Center. And our podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brats Seal and Military Brats Registry. And it's been such a fun, interview today. Our guest
Thank
has been
you.
Sarah Doran, and the author of The Peppered Sky and soon to be The Sleeping Giants. And so thank you, Sarah, for coming in.
Thank you for having me and also for the work that y'all are doing. It's so honoring to see museums and outreaches that are specifically focused on military families. I mean, that's what I'm here to do. That's what y'all are here to do. And I know that the military community is thankful for our work. And so keep going.
Yeah. Well, we have all, we what is it? Failure is not an option, right?
That's right, exactly.
That's right. Well, it was great talking, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for having me.